You think he's with them?
Trapp dragged his palm across a mess of stubble that hadn't been hacked back in almost a week. It was reaching that point where it started to itch, and the heat wasn't making things any better. They had been tracking Warren Grover's men, or at least that's who they presumed they were, for the best part of 24 hours. The target convoy had stopped for a few hours in the middle of the night, in all likelihood to get some rest.
The satellite shots don't have the same resolution as the Cessna. Can't make out the faces. He might be, but then again, maybe not.
Trapp clapped the DEA man on the shoulder.
Great. Incisive analysis like that is why we keep you around.
Buzz off.
If Grover's men had gotten some rest, then Trapp and the ragtag crew around him hadn't been so lucky. They were always several hours behind their quarry, scrambling to acquire sufficient weapons, gear, equipment, and vehicles to cover all bases without falling too far behind. Only time would tell whether they had managed to strike the right balance. He desperately hoped they had. Burke was sitting in the back of a General Motors SUV with both the rear doors wide open in the hope of coaxing a little breeze, though there was precious little of that. He had his laptop balanced on his knees and was glued to a live satellite feed. He pointed at the screen.
That's them. Looks like about half of them are on foot on the ridgeline. The rest are still in their vehicles.
What the hell are they doing?
Trapp had a creeping suspicion that Grover had somehow learned that he was being watched and that all this was a setup. Why else would the man have come here?
Could be a thousand reasons.
He wished his body would one day learn to resist just this type of pre-battle nerves. It was always the same, no matter how much experience he gained.
Beats me.
Burke squinted at the screen.
Hey, look at this.
What are you showing me?
Not exactly sure. This is them, right?
Burke pointed to a collection of about five parked SUVs in a line along a road that cut through a hillside leading to a ridge.
Yeah.
Well, look at this vehicle. It broke away from the group a couple of minutes ago. Driving pretty quick, too.
Going where?
Dunno. And remember, the satellite feed's 5 minutes delayed for image processing or whatever. So everything we see now happened, about 7.5 minutes ago.
Zoom out.
Burke did as requested, and a much larger section of the satellite feed came into view on the small computer screen. At the bottom left, an iridescent circular shape reflected the dying rays of the afternoon sun. The map overlay indicated that it was a lake, though Trapp couldn't see any water.
Hold up.
Trapp tapped the screen urgently.
What's that?
The cursor moved rapidly across the screen as Burke rotated the map before zeroing in on the section that Trapp had just pointed out. Almost 30 vehicles came into view, parked at all angles across the road that led to the dried-up lake, about a mile to the north.
I'm guessing that's the party. Damn, but that's a lot of bad guys.
You're telling me.
He jumped out of the back of the SUV. He attracted Hector's attention, as well as some uncomprehending stares from a couple more of the Marines who didn't speak English so well.
Listen up, guys. We got something. Get your shit together. We might have to move out fast.
You sure that's a good idea?
Hell no. But unless you got a better idea, I don't see we have any other option. Besides, I'm not suggesting we go toe-to-toe with these guys. Just to get close enough to watch. Maybe we get lucky.
Better you than me.
They watched as the breakaway truck closed the distance to the larger collection of vehicles before stopping. All four doors opened and five distinct figures stepped out. They were just dots on the screen at first, before Burke increased the resolution.
Four men, and maybe a woman. But don't put money on that.
Wouldn't dream of it.
What do you think's going on here?
Trapp looked over the satellite feed one last time and scratched his chin, analyzing the situation as best he could. Grover's men had the high ground, though they were far fewer in number than whoever these new guys were. That was interesting, and something he couldn't explain. Tactics and training were important, but in his experience, lead had a weight that couldn't be ignored. There had to be at least 100 shooters in the big group, and only a couple dozen with Grover. If their situations were reversed, Trapp wouldn't like those odds.
I'm guessing an ambush, but I might be wrong. If I'm right, the real question is, who's about to get a nasty surprise?
Warren Grover had his belly on the dirt like the grunt infantryman he'd never been. He held a pair of high-power binoculars and studied the still-empty lake bed below.
Where are they?
The waiting was getting to him. The stress, ever present since this whole mess started careening off the rails, stalked him every waking moment of every living day, and nightmares haunted his dreams. Even now, at the culmination of it all, he couldn't stop his mind from conjuring scenarios of how it all might slip away from him.
Not long, boss.
Grover didn't know this man's name. In total, he had 29 shooters with him. Dug in at the top of the ridgeline, weapons trained on the meeting place a couple of hundred yards below. They wore camouflage desert pattern fatigues that blended perfectly into the tan scrubland they lay on and sported a variety of deadly weaponry. There were 7 machine gun nests in total and the same number of sniper teams. He'd argued for more of both, but had been overruled by his own men, who responded that the sharpshooters needed spotters and the machine gunners needed assistance reloading. Grover seethed at the intervention, but was forced to concede the matter. But if things went wrong, he vowed, they would have to pay.
Contact Carrion's guards. Get a status report.
Sir, are you sure that's wise? Wouldn't it be better to wait? Plan is in motion. Anything we do now will only increase the likelihood of something going wrong.
Grover stared venomously at the man.
Are you questioning my judgment?
The man made an obvious attempt to mollify his paymaster.
We get one shot at this, sir. If we blow it, then that's it.
Grover was forced to concede the point, though he didn't have to like it. He swiveled the binoculars to the left, searching for the point at which Carrion's convoy would emerge in just a few short minutes. He could almost taste victory, but that was part of the problem. Because just as prominent in the air was the scent of defeat, and only time would tell which would be his fate. Trap, Burke, and Ikeda were accompanied by Hector and 8 of his men. The small band numbered 12 in total and was split between 4 vehicles, all personal trucks and SUVs owned by the Mexican Marines. Sprawled across the back seats of the rearmost vehicle as it jolted at 60 miles an hour over the rough desert mud road, Trap attempted to strap his equipment on as beside him, Burke continued to monitor the rapidly evolving situation. Burke picked up a walkie-talkie.
Okay, looks like we've got a second group approaching from the northwest. About 25 vehicles, everything from an 18-wheeler to a Range Rover. It's a friggin' carnival down there.
This is the most ridiculous thing I've seen in a long time. What the hell is going on?
Burke pulled himself away from the screen for a few moments.
Your guess is as good as mine. We've got 3 different groups spoiling for a fight, and we don't have a clue who any of them are.
4.
How?
4 groups. Grover, the 2 convoys, and us.
Oh, yeah? I guess you're right.
Trap dragged a duffel bag from the trunk, over the back seat, and onto his lap. He pulled the zipper open roughly and reached inside to retrieve several loaded magazines, which he stuffed into every available pouch and pocket before passing them forward to the 2 Marines in the front seats. He knew that the same scene was being repeated in each of the 4 vehicles. The guy in the passenger seat checked his rifle and gave him a thumbs up of appreciation for the extra ammunition.
We're about 5 minutes out. We need to slow down once we hit the dogleg up ahead. About 3 minutes. Otherwise, they'll hear us coming a mile off.
Trap pointed at the laptop and snapped his fingers urgently, then practically dragged it off Burke's lap. The DEA man didn't seem to notice and busied himself stocking up on his own ammunition. Trap stared at the screen intently. The computer bounced on his lap as the SUV's front wheels hit an enormous pothole, causing the entire vehicle to lurch violently upward. The 3 groups that Burke had mentioned were clear in the satellite feed. The group they'd followed all the way from Mexico City, Grover's men, were up on the ridgeline. It was hard to make out exactly how many of them there were, but they were exceedingly well-armed. The only consolation was that as far as he could tell, each of their firing positions was pointed down toward the dry lake below. Still, Trap's ragtag team was outnumbered by at least 2-1, and probably closer to 3. However the next few minutes was to proceed, it had every chance of going sideways, and fast. But then, what choice did they have? If Grover had caused this mess, then the United States had a moral duty to do something about it. And in the absence of the cavalry, Trapp, Burke, and Eliza Ikeda were all the help that Hector's men were going to get. There was, of course, a secondary reason, a less honorable one. If the United States really had precipitated this crisis, even indirectly, then the truth could never come out. If it did, then the greatest crisis in U.S.-Mexico relations for decades would be just the starting point. The revelation could feasibly usher in an anti-American government that would cease all cooperation with law enforcement authorities. The southern border would cease to be even a speed bump for terrorists, criminals, and the cartels that had turned Mexico into a free fire zone. The thought of American streets consumed by the same violent spasms that had swallowed Hector's country made Trapp's skin crawl. He cleared his head as he spoke into his lapel mic.
Okay, guys. The first group is on the move. I think this thing is about to go down.
Carrion's SUV was at the head of a long convoy of his men's vehicles as they proceeded to the meeting point. That was potentially unwise, but he couldn't bear the thought of dragging this out a moment longer than was necessary. His stomach was a bubbling cauldron of acid, which wasn't helped by the presence of two of Grover's jackbooted thugs sitting in the back seats.
Not long now. Stop here.
Iker did as he was instructed, and one by one, the remaining 20 or 30 trucks, pickups, and sedans coalesced into a loose arrangement around him. He put his fingers in the door handle, but before opening it, he turned to his lieutenant.
You're a good man, Iker. Believe me, I won't forget that.
He received a frown in return, then the bobbing of the man's head.
Thank you, boss. I'm here for you. You know me.
Okay, time to go.
He pulled the truck's front door open and jumped out, instantly bursting into action, ordering and cajoling his men into position. What was about to happen was akin to a Cold War spy swap, with similar odds of someone getting a twitchy trigger and blowing everything to hell, especially with what he had planned. He created a defensive circle composed of expensive, tricked-out pickup trucks, complete with alloy wheels and custom entertainment systems. Even now, Grover's guards stayed within a few feet of him, close enough to hear every word that escaped his lips.
You! Get everyone into a circle! Now!
Within a minute or so, all 100 of the fighters that Carrion had brought with him were arrayed in loose ranks. Most wore jeans, t-shirts, even a smattering of soccer shirts. In place of Kevlar helmets, they had reversed baseball caps. But most had body armor strapped to their chests, sourced from the same suppliers that outfitted soldiers worldwide. That was the good thing about the military-industrial complex, Carrion thought. The only language it cared about was money, and he had plenty of that to go around. The men had webbing around their waists and extra magazines stuffed into pockets and underneath their belts. They were a messy, ragtag bunch, but every man among them was a fighter and a killer. Every single one had fired a weapon in anger, and most armies around the world couldn't say that. They wouldn't break in a fight.
At least they won't break if things are going well.
Behind them, Reyes's wife was hemmed in by four of Grover's guards. The men were masked, unreadable, and implacable. They carried their weapons like the professionals they were. The girl's presence had attracted his men's attention, and not just because of her unusual beauty. She was wearing denim shorts and a baggy, block-shaped man's t-shirt, which did little to disguise her figure. Unsurprisingly, she was greeted with stolen glances and bawdy comments, to which she did not respond. Carrion lifted his pistol from the holster at his hip and tapped it gently against the windshield to attract the attention of the gathered crowd, though this was hardly necessary. He waited until he had absolute silence before he began.
Everybody knows why we are here. Nobody wanted this war, but those pussies from Culiacan started it anyway. They hit us in the night like women. They have no honor, no cojones. Is that right? So it's time to end this thing, right here and right now. Are you with me?
The rumble of a cord brought a smile to Carrion's lips.
Good. Because Reyes didn't count on one thing. He didn't count on us taking his wife.
He pointed at Jennifer Reyes. His men, he knew, needed to be excited, but they also needed reassurance. To know that he would do everything he could to preserve their lives. That he was not a capricious general, but a father figure.
So I expect you to fight. I expect you to win. But...
He leaned forward and adopted an almost conspiratorial tone.
Believe me when I tell you that I will do everything possible to resolve this without bloodshed. I never wanted this war. I hope to end it without spilling blood. But that's in her husband's hands.
He paused, appearing to glance casually out at the horizon. Instead, he was studying the hillside that towered above him, knowing that somewhere up there, Grover's men were already entrenched, aiming their weapons down. Hopefully, not at him. This was a huge gamble. There was every chance that even if things went well with Ramon Reyes, and Grover's men cut the rival cartel boss down, his former employee might still break their agreement, and the men on the hill would turn their weapons on him, too. But what choice did he have? There was a reason he went for the Hail Mary play, and it wasn't because things were going well. He blinked, realizing that his men were still staring expectantly up at him and beginning to glance uncertainly at each other. Knowing that he could not afford that, he hefted his pistol above his head and looked each of his men in the eye in turn, or at least as many as he could manage.
And never forget, I'll be right by your side. Not hiding in a bunker, not on some beach somewhere, but to your left and to your right. And if I die today, then so be it. But trust me, I wouldn't be anywhere else.
They're coming.
Ramon Reyes stepped out of his car, surrounded by 100 of his deadliest friends. Mindful of the risk of being hit by a sniper's bullet, he was careful to keep himself low and out of sight. Mendoza handed him a slim black pair of binoculars. He pressed them to his eyes, steadying himself by placing an arm on a nearby truck.
You really think she's there?
Probably. We know they have her. Why take a bargaining chip if you don't plan on using it?
They had trodden this same ground over and over again these past couple of days, always coming to the same conclusion.
And what if it's an ambush?
Probably is. So it's a fight. It's always going to end this way, right?
Reyes played the binoculars over the assortment of vehicles across the lake bed from him. His boots sank into the delicate, thin sand underfoot as he examined the opposing force. He saw faces, but no visible weapons. They were doubtless armed as heavily as he and his men were. It would be foolish not to do so, and Fernando Carrion was anything but a foolish man. Though that was certainly true, Ramon still did not understand why he had started this fight in the first place. It made no sense. Why go to all this effort, expend so much blood and treasure, court media attention, and government displeasure in equal measure, only to end up in the exact place you started? It didn't make sense. Not unless this was Carrion's final move, his checkmate. Maybe then the reward would prove worth the risk. Maybe.
You're right. I guess we're about to find out.
Reyes dropped the binoculars from his eyes. The picture they painted for him was nothing more than an illusion. Information without illumination.
Do you see her?
No.
His lieutenant reached out and squeezed Reyes' shoulder. It was a comforting gesture, overly familiar, but he did not mind. There were few men in the world who could get away with doing that. Fewer still after the losses he'd already sustained in this pitiless war. But Milo was one of them.
We'll know shortly, one way or another.
He pointed out across the lake bed.
Ah, look! They're giving the signal!
Reyes followed the outstretched arm and saw that Mendoza was right. One of Carrion's men had tied a dirty piece of cloth to a pole, climbed on top of his vehicle, and was waving it back and forth. It wasn't quite a white flag of parley, but it would have to do. He closed his eyes, steadying himself for his part in this. The agreement had been for both men to meet at a spot in between the two camps, unarmed and without guards. The security would be assured by the fighters at their backs. But in no man's land, they would be forced to trust each other. It had sounded good in principle, less so now that he had to do it.
Ramon, when he walks out, hold back, just for a couple of seconds.
Why?
I don't trust them. That's all. Perhaps he means to shoot you the second you step out into the open.
A comforting thought. But someone has to take the first step.
Just a second, that's all I'm asking. Long enough for me to get a bead on him. Call it mutually assured destruction. Once Carrion's in the open, he won't dare let one of his men take a shot at you. It'll be signing his own death certificate.
That sounded right to Reyes. It would provide a short measure of comfort for the long walk.
Okay. One moment. That's all. I can't risk delaying any longer. His conditions were plain, and this thing's precarious enough as it is.
Thank you.
Now that the moment had finally arrived, Fernando Carrion was no longer nervous. He didn't know when the acid had drained from his stomach, when his palms had dried and saliva had once again started to flow inside his mouth, but he was pleased on all three counts. He tapped the pistol at his hip.
You sure about this, boss?
Iker was still a little stiff in his mannerisms and speech, but Carrion liked that he didn't mince his words.
What if it's a trap?
It is a trap, just not the way you think. Are you ready?
You know I am.
Let's hope so, for both our sakes.
The squat lieutenant glanced at the pistol on Carrion's hip, but said nothing. He knew that his boss wasn't supposed to wear it in the meeting with Reyes. They had discussed as much, but perhaps something had changed. Regardless, he didn't question it.
Bring the girl.
Jennifer Reyes stumbled forward, pushed by her four guards. Like his own, they were not bodyguards. The welfare of their charge was not the primary concern of the men behind the masks. Carrion waited until they brought her right to him. He was now surrounded by all eight of Grover's men. They held their rifles expertly, fingers resting only a couple of inches away from their triggers. He leaned into his act.
Remember, when I call her name, don't hesitate. Send her right out. Any delay and Reyes might think something's gone wrong. All I want tonight is a screw and a drink. The last thing I need is a bullet in my back. Understood?
Indeed.
Good.
It was all an act, of course. Grover's thugs knew the plan as well as he did. Reyes was never supposed to make it more than a couple of feet from his convoy. His own role was simply to draw the rival cartel leader into the open. One of Grover's snipers was to finish the job. That was the plan, as Grover's men knew it. At least they thought they knew the plan. Carrion turned away from the masked guards, fixing their positions in his mind. It would only take a few seconds. They could not move very far, perhaps not at all. He sucked in as much oxygen as his lungs could handle. He steadied himself. Then he started walking out of the circle of trucks and pickups toward Reyes. His hand rested on his holster.
Boss!
For an instant, Carrion closed his eyes, grateful that his man, conscientious as always, had taken the bait. He could have done without it, probably, but it was better for Iker to call for him to stop instead of doing it himself. It would raise fewer suspicions.
Not too fast. Make him work.
He looked over his shoulder.
What?
Jefe, the gun. Aren't you supposed to be unarmed? What if Reyes suspects?
Carrion raised his arm to forestall the speech. He turned with a smile on his face, moving slowly. All of Grover's men were still in their previous positions. They seemed unsuspecting.
I guess I'm a little jumpy.
He forced the grin onto his face and hoped that it wasn't too obviously false.
I haven't done this in a while.
He took a step toward Jennifer Reyes and the gaggle of Grover's men who surrounded her. As far as he could make out, their weapons were still safetied. They had no cover. They were arrogant, assuming they were the ones in control of their destiny. Carrion unbuttoned his holster. He pulled the weapon free, surreptitiously sliding his thumb across the safety and disguising the click with a cough. He walked right up to Iker, raising his arm as if to hand the weapon over. Then he squeezed the trigger three times, shifting the aim fractionally with each pull. Three of Grover's men dropped to the ground before the rest had a chance to even flinch.
Follow me, Iker!
Carrion pivoted to get a clear shot at the fourth. For the first time, his new right-hand man seemed actually shocked by the events occurring around them. He was frozen in place. Carrion couldn't wait. His heart was thundering now, halfway between exploding and seizing up. The adrenaline surging through him choked off his aim and made him snatch at the trigger. He squeezed it again, but missed. And the same held true for his next few shots. As if stumbling out of the paralysis of sleep, all of his Sicarios were fumbling for their weapons, but slowly. He couldn't blame them.
Hurting!
A bullet zipped past his hair. It couldn't have missed him by more than a couple of inches. The thought enraged him.
Get fucking donkey!
He squeezed the trigger over and over until the magazine ran dry, and one more of Grover's men lay dead on the desert sand. Finally, Iker reacted, understanding that either he did something now or his new boss and his ticket to the good life would die before his eyes. He raised his rifle, an AK-47, to his shoulder and pumped the entire magazine into a space around Jennifer Reyes. The air was suddenly filled with hot lead and the deafening rattle of automatic gunfire, as from every angle the Federación Sicarios rushed to protect their leader. Carrion ducked for cover, sheltering behind the bed of a pickup that was instantly turned into a pincushion, though whether from enemy fire or friendly was momentarily unclear. One by one, caught between a vicious pincer of gunfire, Grover's mercenaries succumbed to the inevitable. They crumpled onto the floor of the desert, their blood staining the precious white sand. And then there was a stunned, horrified silence. Everyone here had come expecting to do violence, but not like this.
What the hell's going on, boss?
Carrion was numbed by the realization that he was somehow, miraculously, still alive. He looked down, searching his body for any evidence that he might have been shot and somehow missed it, but there was nothing. He was intact. He'd done it.
Boss! Shit, boss. The Reyes girl, she's been shot.
Mierde!
Carrion charged toward the body of Jennifer Reyes, who collapsed in slow motion to the desert floor, surrounded by blood and death and gore. And as he did so, gunfire crackled from the ridgeline above.
Ramon, get down!
Acting on instinct and buoyed by not just the rattle of gunfire, but also a lifetime's worth of trust in his friend, Ramon Reyes fell to the deck. He hadn't even made it a foot out of the ring of vehicles before the gunfire started within Fernando Carrion's camp. He scrambled desperately back into safety and sheltered, half-crouched in the shadow of his Range Rover.
What the fuck was that?
Mendoza didn't reply immediately. He and the men around him were all training their weapons on the rival force 70 yards distant. He watched as work parties of Sicarios ran to the back of the 18-wheeler, right at the center of their encampment, and retrieved the heavy weaponry they had brought as a last resort. Reyes brought the binoculars back to his ears.
Were they shooting at us? I don't think so.
Mendoza dropped to the sand by his boss's side. The butt of his rifle was pressed into the crook of his shoulder, and his eyes never stopped roving.
Maybe one of them went for him.
Let's hope they did our dirty work for us.
He looked around, checking that none of his men were shooting. If this was just a mistake, someone with a twitchy finger on the trigger, then he didn't want to blow the whole thing up while his wife was still in play. Luckily, they were not. As so often, he silently thanked the quick thinking of his oldest friend. While he had been cowering in the dirt, Mendoza had jumped into action.
Hell.
Reyes pointed upward, careful not to reveal himself.
Look! Up in the hills!
Mendoza looked up.
What the fuck is going on?
Reyes could only lie there helplessly. The term fog of war had never seemed more appropriate. Gunfire was crackling all around them like a sudden hailstorm impacting a tin roof, and yet somehow they were the only actors in this macabre play not currently being shot at. It didn't make a lick of sense. What the hell kind of plan was it to coax someone into an ambush and then not even bother taking your shot? No, it was apparent that there was something here that he was missing.
What do you want us to do?
Mendoza's voice was strangely distant as he looked up at the ridgeline. Reyes's gaze was drawn to the same spot. The gunfire was coming from a section a few hundred feet above and peppering Carrion's position mercilessly.
Shit! What if he thinks it's us shooting?
He suddenly felt fear for his wife's life as he never had before. Perhaps it wasn't even fear, just the jealousy of a man not used to losing control. But whatever the cause, he knew he couldn't let her die.
We need to make a move while he's distracted. We'll use the truck as cover. If it makes it that far, use it to force a gap in his lines. We'll go through that.
Oh, you sure about this, boss? We'll take a hell of a beating, especially if those guys in the hills decide to make us a target. They can pick us off from up there, and we won't be able to do a damn thing about it.
Reyes grimaced, knowing that it was true. And yet what else could he do? To lose his wife once was careless. To allow it to happen twice would be a disaster, one that his enemies wouldn't soon allow him to forget. In his weakened condition, that might prove fatal.
Let's get moving.
Get them on the radio now. What the hell's going on? I want him dead. I don't care what it costs.
It's no good, sir. We can't raise them, any of them.
Grover grabbed a tan-colored scope that lay just inside the lip of the ridge. He pushed it to his eye and trained the viewfinder on the unruly gaggle of vehicles that fool Carrion had brought with him. He should never have allowed this. Carrion had turned on him. That much was clear. He sensed that events were slipping from his grasp.
What should we do?
The question hung in the air without answer as he lay against the dirt, fruitlessly searching the scene below him for any hint of meaning. Carrion's men were sheltering from the gunfire behind their vehicles. In the center of the circle, half a dozen or more bodies lay still, blood watering the sand around them. His men, Grover knew, the ones he'd sent to watch Carrion and the Reyes girl. They were irreplaceable. All he had left were the 29 with him now, all mercenaries. They would not linger long once they understood that all hope of victory was gone, and that fact could surely not remain lost on them for very much longer.
Did I tell you to stop shooting?
Grover was trying to both fill the silence and push back on his rising anxiety.
I want every last one of them dead.
What about Reyes?
Grover jerked the scope toward the other assortment of vehicles.
Do you see him?
No.
He took his eye away from the viewfinder and tossed the scope back at the speaker.
Find him!
Around him, men jumped into action. The machine gun nests still concentrated their fire on Carrion's men, sweeping from vehicle to vehicle and leaving them smoldering wrecks. But the snipers, working in tandem with the spotters beside them, shifted their focus to Reyes's small force.
They're moving. Three. Now four of the trucks. No, all of them.
Retreating?
The opposite.
Grover closed his eyes. It was apparent now that he'd lost control, if he'd ever had it at all. The men around him must have reached the same conclusion. What were his options? Whatever he decided, he needed to pick quickly. If he was trying to figure out what came next, those around him would be doing the same, deciding whether their futures would be better served by acting with him or against. He could run now and leave the two combatants who were beating seven shades out of each other on the lake bed below. There was money secreted away in Cayman Islands accounts and Dominican Republic vaults. He had prepared passports and bolt holes ahead of time for just this eventuality. It was still possible for him to escape this mess and live free the rest of his life as an extremely wealthy man. Not a billionaire. Too much money had been expended on this operation, and he'd only had full command of El Federacion for a couple of weeks. Not long enough to prepare a real retirement, but enough to be extremely comfortable. But perhaps there was still a chance to salvage this. Reyes needed to die, or Carrion, ideally both. Either death would bring chaos, and chaos pulled opportunity in its wake. He still had Abalos on his side, and Salazar. There was still a path. Whether the glimmer of light he saw was real or not, Grover didn't know, but he saw a way out. A way to not just escape this calamity with his dignity intact, but also a path to the goal he had sought all along. And like a drowning man clutches a rope, he reached for it with single-minded focus.
Sir?
What?
He pushed himself back as though dodging a splash of hot oil as a volley of bullets impacted the ridgeline, sparking off boulders just a few feet away. His interlocutor was now looking down at him from above, and Grover sensed the man's scorn, even if he maintained a studiously polite tone.
I asked if you wanted us to pull back. It looks like they're ranging us now. One of my men spotted a heavy machine gun.
We have the high ground, do we not?
Grover's mind was now closing with rage at what he perceived as the man's fear, not recognizing that it was, in truth, a lack of faith.
We do, but they have the numbers. This wasn't supposed to turn into a pitched battle.
Well, now it has. So do your damn job. You think you'll find another gig that pays you as well as this one?
No, sir.
Then we have an understanding. Do you have eyes on Ramon Reyes?
Grover was careful to position himself a few feet back from the lip of the ridge, conscious that gunfire and shrapnel was now zipping over his head with increasing regularity. He surveyed his men, who were scattered in line across a section of the hillside about 90 feet across. There were 14 two-man teams in total, a few feet separated from each other, and each dug in behind a small structure built from sandbags. They were flimsy defenses, really. They'd argued for more, but he hadn't seen the point. He ground his teeth, frustrated at how long it was taking to get an answer. It was a simple enough question, wasn't it? Either they saw him or they didn't.
Well,
Something scored his face, leaving it stinging with heat and pain. It took him a couple of seconds to realize that it was incoming fire. Grover watched as one of the sniper teams was eviscerated by incoming machine gun fire. One moment they were there, the next both their heads seemed simply to disappear in a spray of red as the heavy rounds passed through the earth at the top of the ridgeline and into flesh. There was a moment of stunned silence as all around on the ridge, Grover's men ceased firing and turned to gaze at the bodies of their fallen comrades. The clamor of the violence in the valley below was still clearly audible, if anything, growing in intensity as Reyes's men joined the fight. The tenor of it had changed, and the tempo, and almost instantly the volume of gunfire concentrated on their stronghold on the ridgeline faded as Carrion's men were forced to confront the more immediate threat headed right for them. The two rival cartel mobs were finally confronting each other, as he had hoped they would. But up on the hillside, Grover's men were no longer joined in battle. He saw one of the machine gun teams scramble backward a few feet, ducking behind cover and leaving their weapons where they were. He watched, open-mouthed, as both to their right and left others did the same. The trickle became a flow, and before long almost every post was unmanned and men were streaming down the hill on either side of them.
What the hell are you doing, you idiots? Keep shooting! You think I'm paying you to fucking run?
There was no reply other than the clatter of a rifle being tossed onto the stones at his feet as one of the mercenaries ran past. All that Grover could see of this man was his lips, which were white with fury. Not just fury, rage. And so he froze, correctly suspecting that the anger was directed at him. It was over. Rounds were still chewing into the ridgeline up above, but only because the men pulling the triggers didn't know they were shooting at ghosts. And even if his mind had not yet fully come to terms with this new reality, his body did. He broke into a run, thoughtless, heedless, as fear and panic overtook him. He ran after his former men, jinking slightly to the left so that he was heading for a different gully than most as his brain started whirring once again. His men, the deserters, would soon realize that he had value. They would come after him, and by then, he had to be long gone. If Fernando Carrion was still alive, he would pay anything for one Warren Grover. And that prospect was too horrifying even to imagine.
What the hell?
A thin rock slide from the slope above first caught his attention. His fist flashed upward, and the men, and one woman, surrounding him instantly dropped to their knees, each with a weapon at the ready. His eyes darted left and right, every sense on edge, as he tried to work out what had triggered the sensation of danger in his mind. They were in a gully on the backside of the hill that led up to the ridge. It was about 40 feet wide and a little more forested than the rest of the area, though the foliage competed with large boulders the size of men. Most of the bushes and trees were dried-out husks, but their branches were sturdy and tangled and provided excellent cover. It was now late in the afternoon, and the sun had dropped out of sight. The terrain reminded him of the mountains of Afghanistan, only a lot warmer. The official warning came a couple of seconds later.
Looks like the bad guys are coming your way.
Burke spoke over the radio network from his makeshift command post back in the truck. He repeated the warning in Spanish.
How many?
Just about all of them. moving fast. I'd say maybe 30. Hard to be sure. And it looks like they're coming right for you.
Okay. Get yourself somewhere safe. We'll handle it from here.
Copy.
They split into two teams of about six apiece and scrambled behind cover on opposite sides of the narrow valley. Trap scrambled over a large boulder, pausing on the top to give Ikeda a hoist up after him. She rolled silently down onto the other side. Both took up firing positions that afforded them a view of the gully. The prime question was whether they had been spotted. If so, then their small force of a dozen was about to be pitted against one almost three times its size. Hector's men were excellent fighters, but from everything they knew, so was the enemy. The movement of men was evident to the naked ear by now, which pulled Trap back to the present. He heard boots thumping against stone and dirt, the heavy breath of bodies under strain, and the same tumbling of debris that had first alerted him to the enemy's movement.
They're coming into the open now. I see them. At least five. More.
Trap double-tapped the transmit button in acknowledgement.
Definitely running. Gun, gun, gun.
The warning was appreciated, if not in the slightest surprising. Trap looked to his right and left, searching for a better spot, only to realize that he was stuck where he was, at least if he wanted to avoid signposting his presence. The first of Grover's men crossed the approximately 15-yard section of the gully that he had in sight. He almost did a double take. They weren't attacking. They were quite clearly retreating in panic. From what? He looked again as another runner almost tripped, so careless was his flight. This one was dressed the same as the rest, black boots, dark navy fatigues, and the regulation black balaclava. As far as Trap could tell, he wasn't armed. That made the decision for him. Only an idiot ran into a fight without a weapon, an idiot or a fanatic. And Trap suspected that Grover's men were not the latter. They were mercenaries, capable of fighting hard when offered the right level of compensation, but equally liable to break and run, which was exactly what they were doing.
We can take them. They have no idea we're here.
I concur. 10 seconds. Warning shots.
The warning rattled over the radio net a second time in Spanish for Hector's men's benefit, though Trap suspected that most understood enough English that it wasn't necessary. He turned to Ikeda. Her index finger was tapping against her rifle, but she was otherwise steady.
You ready?
Like the day I was born.
Not sure if that's a good thing or not.
The last couple of seconds on his internal stopwatch burned away.
Let's go.
Trap leapt onto the boulder. He brought his rifle to his shoulder. A little further up the gorge on his side, four of Hector's men did the same, though one blasted his weapon on full automatic. He said a prayer of thanks to whoever was watching over them from up above that this part of the country was almost uninhabited. That lead had to come down somewhere, and it was better that it met desert dirt than someone's home. On the other side of the gully, Hector and five of his men appeared from behind a thick section of foliage and copied the maneuver. Some of Grover's men were so stunned by the sudden appearance of men with guns that they tripped and bit the dirt. Trap winced as one of them appeared to knock himself out.
Well, saves me having to shoot the guy.
Down!
Some of Grover's men were still running down the mountain, though even those seemed to be moving through molasses. Trap pressed the stock of his rifle into his shoulder and trained it on the gaggle of retreating soldiers in the gully. They were both above and below the ambush point. At least 15 of them were above him. The reality of their present tactical position began to dawn on him. Grover's men might be retreating, but they were still a formidable force, and they had the weight of numbers on their side. It would only take one misstep to turn this into a bloodbath. He watched a tall mercenary start tugging his rifle strap off his shoulder.
Don't do that, asshole.
He aimed carefully at a spot just a few inches from the man's boots and fired a single round. The slug sparked off a stone and ricocheted in the opposite direction. The target reacted in slow motion, jumped in almost comical fashion before falling backward onto his ass. Trap kept his rifle trained on the man, who divested himself of his own weapon with startling alacrity, throwing it down the hillside and scrambling back.
Good move.
Trap glanced over his right shoulder down the hillside, where almost a dozen of the retreating mercenaries were still picking their way out of the gully. They had a head start of at least 80 yards already, which he suspected was insurmountable. They had to deal with the ones they had in front of them first. He just had to hope that Grover wasn't with the first group.
Hector,
Tell them to put their guns down, one by one. No one wants to be a hero today, all right?
As Hector translated the message, Trap jumped down from the boulder. His partner landed by his side with Leonine Grace.
Not my first rodeo.
Never said it was.
They worked as a pair, Ikeda stepping back and providing cover as Trap encountered the mercenaries directly, taking weapons from them and patting them down before roughly manhandling them onto the dirt.
You got any flex cuffs?
Nope.
Okay, be careful.
The guy on the ground in front of him was only armed with a pistol, holstered at his hip. Trap reached down, removed the weapon, and ejected the round from the chamber before tossing it in one direction, the magazine in another, and the weapon itself in a third entirely. He repeated the same with the next, and the next. All over the hillside, Hector's men were copying the maneuver. At least some of them had cuffs with them, and they were none too gentle when affixing them. Trap made his way up the hill, leading with his rifle. Half a dozen of the masked fighters were still to be apprehended. Two of them, at the front, already had their fingers interlaced behind their heads. He indicated to them to get down, and they did without protest. He almost missed the movement. Almost.
Don't do it, jackass.
Trap snapped the barrel of his rifle up, aiming it directly at the offending fighter's chest. His finger was already grazing the trigger, applying a couple of pounds of pressure. Not enough to fire a round, but sufficient to speed the process in the event he needed to. Now was one of those times. The shooter at the back had his fingers on his pistol's grip and looked like he planned to draw it at any moment.
I'm warning you, do not touch that weapon. Drop it now.
The man made his decision. His hand clutched the weapon, elbow already drawing back as he attempted to withdraw it from its holster. Three rounds exploded from the barrel, landing directly in the center of the shooter's chest. He quickly readjusted his aim. He fired another burst at something more solid, aware that the mercenaries were all wearing armor plates. He felt no remorse, at least not in that moment. The man had made his decision and had to live with the consequences, or in this case, not.
Cover me.
He moved up the hill with his rifle packed to his shoulder.
You got it.
Ikeda barely sounded ruffled by the sudden burst of gunfire. Trap's own heart was thundering in his chest, and he dropped his trigger hand to his pants to wipe off the sweat as he climbed. As he reached the fallen body of the man he'd just shot, he kicked the pistol from a set of splayed, unmoving fingers. Trap stood over him for a few seconds, coming to terms with the suddenness of what had just happened. He got back to work. Around him, the three other mercenaries were frozen in place, as shocked by the sudden outbreak of violence as he was. As Ikeda held her weapon over them, Hector's men moved up the hillside with professional ease, frisking and securing them. Only when Trap was absolutely certain that the scene was secure did he drop his weapon. And even then, he brought his eye to the scope first and scanned every inch of hillside within sight, just in case. He let the gun fall into its strap and dropped heavily onto his haunches, boots scraping on the rocky soil below. A wave of exhaustion overcame him, to the point that he didn't even look up when someone joined him.
Suicide by cop. You okay?
It was a stupid thing to do. So what was the point?
Only he knows. Maybe he didn't want to spend the rest of his life behind bars. Or maybe he just panicked, thought he might be able to run.
Then he was an idiot.
No one's disputing that.
What the hell are we doing here?
Trap watched through clouded eyes as Hector's men started frog marching the bound mercenaries into one central location before frisking them more thoroughly for cell phones, communications devices, anything they could strip for intelligence.
Our jobs?
I guess. Sometimes it seems like all we do is clear up messes that people just like us started in the first place.
Sure, but someone's got to do it, right?
He climbed to his feet and offered her his hand. She accepted it, and he hauled her upright after him.
You're probably right. It's just, this one seems so...
Sorted? I don't think anyone's denying that. This is a messy, horrible, freaking situation. It's a war, I guess, but not an honorable one. How many poor bastards have to die just so that kids back home can snort white powder up their noses?
You think we caught him? Grover, I mean?
She patted him gently on the hand.
Let's go find out.
They walked down the hillside in silence, toward where Hector's men had a little over a dozen prisoners lying flat on the ground, hands tied behind their backs and under constant armed guard. Trap thought over what Ikeda had just said. Maybe it wasn't an honorable war. But did such a thing truly exist? At the end of the day, it was still shooting and killing and dying. And did it really matter whether it was a soldier or a criminal on the other end of a bullet? Sometimes it really didn't feel that way. But as he looked out at the professionalism, more importantly, determination of Hector's men, he realized that he had it all wrong. Maybe they were fighting criminals, but that didn't make the battle any less just. It didn't make his presence here any less valuable. If anything, it was the exact opposite. Ikeda was right that the problem started back home when rich kids paid $40 for a baggie of coke and their broke neighbors paid half that for hits of twice-cut meth. That was a chronic disease that was bigger than him, bigger than her, bigger than anything they could do. But what Warren Grover had started here was worse still. He'd ignited a battle because of some toxic combination of misplaced vanity and unbridled greed. He'd started something he couldn't finish, but someone had to. Maybe that someone was Hector León. But it was just as likely that it was him.
He's not here. The man you are looking for.
Okay.
Trapp ejected the half-spent magazine from his rifle and replaced it with a fresh one.
Then let's go find him.